Dear listeners, Sai Ram and welcome to our program, Sai Ashtotaram, a garland of 108 gems. Sai Ashtotara Shatanamavali is a chant of 108 appellations of Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba. It is a means of worshipping Swami by chanting names that describe His glory in different ways. Chanting the Lord's name is called Namasmarana. Swami has said in His discourses that in different yugas there were different paths to liberation. In the Krita Yuga, it was tapas, penance. In the Treta Yuga, it was yajna, or ceremonial sacrifices. In the Dwapara Yuga, it became worship. But the path to redemption now in the Kali Yuga is Namasmarana. Swami gives another reason why Namasmarana is very important for all of us. Our mind, Swami says, is like a mad and drunk monkey bitten by a scorpion. It means that the vagaries of the mind have no limits and it can go to any extent. Hence, Swami always compares the idle human mind to a genie or a demon that is waiting to devour you if not engaged in some work or the other. A popular saying goes that an idle mind is a devil's workshop. The best way to engage this genie called the mind is to erect a pole and ask the mind to climb up and down until there is some work for it to do. Swami says that the pole is the beautiful form of the Lord, and the process of climbing up and down the pole is the process of doing Namasmarana, that is chanting Lord's name continuously. Thus we see, dear listeners, that chanting the Lord's name is very important. Reciting Sri Satya Sai Ashtotara Shatanamavali, which is the 108 names of Swami, is one of the ways of Namasmarana. In Sanskrit, Ashtotara Shatanamavali means 108 names. Explaining the significance of the number 108, Swami has said, "Man breathes 900 times per hour, approximately. That is, 10,800 times in a day and 10,800 times in the night. 1 plus 8 equals 9, and 9 is a divine number." Further, when Swami was asked why we should chant His 108 names, Swami said that if we chant His name 108 times, at least once, we may chant it with love and devotion. In this program, Sai Ashtotaram, a garland of 108 gems, we will explore the meaning and significance of each name through interesting anecdotes from the lives of Bhagavan and His devotees. In each episode of this program, we will dwell upon two names. To begin with, let's listen to readings of few excerpts on Namasmarana from Swami's Divine Discourse.
The name of God, if recited with love and faith, has the power to bring upon the eager aspirant the grace of God. The name has the overmastering power of even leaping over the ocean. It can award unimagined strength and courage. When questioned whether it was Rama Nama that strengthened Hanuman to cross the ocean, Rama replied that since his body was called Rama, the name that combines the Bijaksharas of both Shiva and Vishnu, he himself was able to conquer Ravana and his hordes. The name has so much efficacy. By repeating the name, the Lord and His attributes can be easily identified. The tongue must be sanctified by the repetition of the name. It has also to be used for the sweet expressions which will spread contentment and joy. Remember the God in whom you move, the God who makes you move, the God who is all this vast universe, the very little atom and the very huge star. Select some name and form for this all-pervasive immanent God and keep it in your tongue and before your mental eye. That is what is called Japa Sahita Dhyanam, recitation of the name come meditation. When you select one name and one form for Smarana, do not talk ill of other names and forms. Behave like the woman of a joint family. She respects and serves the elders of the family, such as the father-in-law and his brothers and her own brother-in-law, but her heart is dedicated to her husband, whom she loves and reveres in a special manner. If you carp at the faith of others, your devotion too is fake. If you are sincere, you will appreciate the sincerity of others too. The Lord has thousands of names. There is no name that is not His. Krishna, Srinivasa, Sai Baba, all names are of the same entity.
Dear listeners, till now you listened to the readings of few excerpts on Namasmarana from Swami's Divine Discourse.
The third name in Sri Satya Sai Ashtottara Shatnamavali is Om Sri Sai Satya Dharma Parayanaya Namaha.
Om Sri Sai Satya Dharma Parayanaya Namaha.
Let's now elucidate the meaning and significance of this name.
Om Sri Sai Satya Dharma Parayanaya Namaha. Baba declares that he has come to establish the reign of Satya, Dharma, Shanti and Prema. Very often he has said, where there is Satya, there will be Prema. For Asatya or falsehood is the consequence of fear, which is absent where there is love. So too, where there is Dharma, there will be Shanti. For Ashanti or unrest is the consequence of injustice or adharma of all types. Baba insists on Satya and Dharma. Dharma, which lays down the do's and don'ts of life, is contained in the Shastras. So Baba has revived the study of Shastras and has reinstated them in the reverence of the people. Parayana means interested in or absorbed in. Since the revival of truth and morality is the very purpose for which he has come, he is absorbed in correcting both the individual and society. Baba, while at Shirdi, said, you must always adhere to truth and fulfill all the promises you make. Then I'll be with you wherever you are and at all times. Even now he exhorts us to be true and moral by the same assurance. He has declared, quote, my name is Satya, I am Satya, my actions are Satya, and my glory is Satya, unquote. He has come for the sake of Dharma, to clarify it, to propagate it, to establish it in every human heart. Because of his loving interest in these two, he has donned this moral frame and come among mortals.
Dear listeners, till now you listened to the explanation of the third name of the Lord in Sri Satya Sai Ashtottara Shatnamavali, that is, Om Sri Sai Satya Dharma Parayanaya Namaha. Let's now listen to a short story related to this name.
Om Sri Sai Satya Dharma Parayanaya Namaha. Salutations to Sri Sai, who solely adheres to truth and righteousness. Dharma is righteousness. Parayana is ultimate refuge. We bow down to Sri Sai, who is the ultimate refuge and can be attained through self-realization by adhering to truth and righteousness. Whenever God has incarnated on earth, He has given utmost importance to adherence to truth and righteousness. The Ramayana narrates the various duties of a father, mother, son, brother, wife, and king. Lord Ramachandra has set an ideal for us by explicitly following his duties as a son, husband, brother, and king. On many occasions, during the Sri Krishna avatar, Bhagavan stressed on the importance of dharma. In the Bhagavad Gita, he has declared, Shreyan sarvadharmo vigunaha, paradharmatsya nushthitat, swadharme nidhanam shreyaha, paradharmo bhayavahaha. Better one's own duty, though devoid of merit, than the duty of another well discharged. Better is death in one's own duty. The duty of another is fraught with fear and generates positive danger. Here, Bhagavan relates to dharma as one's own duty or righteousness. Even while assuring the devotees of his divine protection, Sri Krishna has declared, Sarvadharman parityajya, mamekam sharanam vraja. Abandoning all dharmas of the body, mind and intellect, surrender to me. Live my message is the inner significance of this declaration. There is one significant story from Sai's Shirdi incarnation. Shirdi Sai had one peculiar habit. At times, when he talked, he seemed to speak irrelevant things, apparently vague to a common listener, but relevant and meaningful to the one for whom it was intended. Once, when Shirdi Sai was sitting in Dwarka Mai and talking to his devotees, one unknown person arrived for his darshan. No sooner did he start stepping up onto the steps of Dwarka Mai, Baba thundered at the top of his voice, Stop! Don't climb up! Such an expression was quite alarming to all present, including the person concerned. Not bothering about Baba's warning, he continued climbing the steps of Dwarka Mai. Baba then flew into a rage. His face and eyes turning red with anger, he shouted, Stop there! Don't you dare climb up! Haven't you sold your father? Hearing this, the intruder felt ashamed. He hung his head and left. None were able to understand the significance of this statement. On inquiry, it was revealed that he had recently changed his religion. No one was aware of this. But can anything be hidden from the omniscient Sai? All religions teach the same principle of love. So why did he need to change his religion? He could have fulfilled his duties by remaining true to the religion of his birth. Shirdi Sai did not approve of this and so showed his displeasure. In the present Satya Sai avatar, Swami tells us, My life is my message. At the age of 10, he told Ishwaramma, I have been born to serve. His task of upliftment of humanity is ongoing. Swami says, To follow religion is an eternal law. If one stops abiding by his religion, there will be chaos in the world. In the Gita, Sri Krishna has declared, Yetu dharmyamritamidam, yadhoktam paryupasate, sreddhadhana matparama, bhaktaste tivame priyaha. They indeed who follow this immortal dharma, law of life, as described above, endowed with faith, regarding me as their supreme goal, such devotees are exceedingly dear to me. Today, those devotees who practice righteous conduct religiously are very dear to Sai Krishna. Om Sri Satya Sai Nath Arpanamastu.
Dear listeners, till now you listened to a short story glorifying the third name of the Lord, in Sri Satya Sai Ashtottara Shatanamavali, that is, Om Sri Sai Satya Dharma Parayanaya Namaha. The fourth name in Sri Satya Sai Ashtottara Shatanamavali is Om Sri Sai Varadaya Namaha.
Om Sri Sai Varadaya Namaha.
Let's now elucidate the meaning and significance of this name. Om Sri Sai Varadaya Namaha. Baba is the giver of boons. Vara means boon. Da means giver. Man is a divine spark encased in 5 sheaths, 5 koshas, and Baba by his boons helps all the koshas to function effectively, so that the spark of divinity may be kept alive and aflame. The Annamaya kosha, or the gross physical sheath, he guards from illness. The Pranamaya kosha, or the nerve sheath, he saves from upsets. The Manomaya kosha, or the mind sheath, he guards from insanity, worry and agitation. The Vijnanamaya kosha, or the intellect sheath, he guards from both clog and fog. The Anandamaya kosha, or the bliss sheath, he feeds and fosters. All boons that promote the innate purpose of all these sheaths, he grants profusely, but his grace is granted in order that the body may be worthy of the journey from death to immortality, that nervous energy may serve to establish equanimity, poise and balance, that the mind may be free from agitation, that the intellect may be sharp enough to grasp the universal and absolute, and that the bliss may be unbroken and full. Baba's boons are available for the asking. Knock, and it shall be opened. In several instances, Baba has himself knocked and conferred the boon. When a person is ripe for the gift through suffering or repentance or prayer or righteousness or austerity or study, the Varada, the giver of boons, is ready with a sign of grace.
Dear listeners, till now you listen to the explanation of the fourth name of the Lord in Sri Satya Sai Ashtottara Shatanamavali, that is, Om Sri Sai Varadaya Namaha. Let's now listen to a short story related to this name.
Om Sri Sai Varadaya Namaha. Salutations to Sri Sai, who is the giver of boons. In every incarnation of his, Bhagavan has been granting rewards to devotees who undertake arduous sadhana. God grants his blessings in many ways to those who love him. In his Shirdi Sai incarnation, he used to say, "In the beginning, I give all my devotees whatever they ask for. I grant them so much that ultimately they ask for what I wish to bestow on them." This is a unique incident which reveals Shirdi Sai's extraordinary ways of granting boons. A lot of devotees used to throng the Dwaraka Mai for Shirdi Sai's darshan. In those days, persons like Mahal Sapati, Madhavrav Deshpande, Tatyakote Patil used to assemble around Sai. One day, one gentleman and his family came to Dwaraka Mai for Sai's darshan. When this gentleman's son put his head on Shirdi Sai's feet, Sai made him sit next to him very lovingly, and casting a loving glance towards the boy, he said, "Diya," meaning thereby given. The expression sounded strange to the boy's father and all present, except Madhavrav Deshpande, who at once asked the boy to say, "Liya," meaning thereby, "I accept." Immediately the boy said to Shirdi Sai, "Liya." Sainath smiled happily. The next moment, he took off his robe and put it on that boy. At that time, This gesture of Baba's was beyond anybody's understanding. A few years passed by. Shirdi Sai took Samadhi on Vijayadashami, that is 15th of October in 1918. The young boy grew up and studied to become a doctor. The Sai Sansthan was established at Shirdi. The same boy was appointed as the first president of Shirdi Sai Sansthan. His name was Dr. Gavankar, and Shirdi Sai had blessed him with the honorable robe long back. As Shirdi Sai's well-known words say, "Know that everyone will receive help here. Whatever anyone may ask, he will receive it." We all know that Sai's second incarnation is Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba, in the form of Shiva Shakti. Shiva had once granted a boon to Maharshi Bharadwaj that he would take birth thrice in his lineage. Devi Satyabhama had given an indication to Sri Kondamaraju, Baba's grandfather, of the advent of Sri Krishna. Sri Venkavadhut, a yogi, had also given a hint to Kondamaraju Garu about the birth of a divine being in their family quite early on. Swami's mother Ishwaramma saw a divine flash of blue light entering her womb before Swami's birth. All these were God's boons. Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba says, "When you come to me and see me for the first time, you may feel shy. But I know you since a very long time. So whatever you want to ask of me, ask without any reservations. Do you feel awkward when asking something from your father? Ask me in the same manner." Swami also says, "I am an invaluable diamond with many facets. So don't use me as a paperweight." The inner significance of this is, when I have come to give you the highest treasure, why ask for petty things? When Swami grants boons to his devotees and gives with his innumerable hands, how much can one receive with just two hands? Om Sri Satya Sai Nadharpanamastu.
Dear listeners, till now you listened to a short story glorifying the fourth name of the Lord in Sri Satya Sai Ashtottara Shatanamavali, that is, Om Sri Sai Varadaya Namaha. So dear listeners, in today's episode we explored the meaning and significance of two names of the Lord in Sri Satya Sai Ashtottara Shatanamavali. The explanation of the names is taken from the book Garland of 108 Gems by Professor N. Kasturi, and the short story that you listen to is taken from the book Sri Satya Sai Kalpadrama, compiled by Sri Prashant Prabhakar Palekar, English translation by Srimati Shanti P. Bawalkar. With this we have come to the end of today's episode. We will continue this program next week and explore the meaning and significance of next two names. Dear listeners, we hope you liked this program. Please send us your feedback, comments and suggestions on this, as always, to listener@radiosai.org. Thank you, and loving Sai Ram from Prashant Nilayam.
Sai Ram, dear listeners, now that birthday festivities are over, Professor Venkatraman, as already announced, is ready with his third talk in his new series broadly titled Relevance of Moral Values in the Globalized Age. Over now to Professor Venkatraman.
Dear listeners, greetings and loving Sai Ram from Prashanthi Nilayam. I hope that all of you, wherever you are, had a wonderful birthday season, just as we did here. In my view, what dominated the minds of most of us over here was the celebration of the 25th anniversary of Swami's super speciality inauguration, the hospital in Puttaparthi, As you know, there are two hospitals, super hospitals. This hospital was inaugurated on 22nd November 1991. I was present on that historic occasion, and wow, what a great landmark event that was. Since then, 25 years have passed, and the world has changed far beyond recognition. In fact, even in Puttaparthi, which back in 1991 was a medium-sized village trying to become a small town, it is no longer the Puttaparthi it used to be. One has to just look at the two-wheeler and car traffic inside the ashram, even on a normal day. Now that reference to car traffic gives me a natural opening for today's talk, which is on what exactly is climate change? And why at all should we bother about it? Now, for the benefit of listeners tuning in for the first time, I should perhaps mention that the goal of the current bi-weekly talk series is to explore the basic question whether it is at all possible to have a global society such as we have now that is totally bereft of core, non-negotiable moral values. Now, what I am trying to do via this series of talks is to wrap around the above fundamental question by discussing various aspects of life at the present time, always keeping an eye on how globalization is pressurizing people to either forget or even deliberately abandon moral values, values which people in earlier times always abided by, in fact, for several millennia. Now let me get back to climate change, the theme of this talk. Actually, climate change is the effect, the cause of which is what is called global warming. So, for a start, let me try and explain in simple terms what is meant by global warming, why it is occurring, and why such warming is a matter of deep concern for all who live on the planet, no matter where. Perhaps the best way of introducing the topic is to start with the recent buzz on the last full moon day. You may recall, the excitement was all about how the moon would look bigger than usual, because it would be very close to the Earth. The next time such an event would happen would be in 2030, when a good many of you would still be around, while I certainly do not expect to be. That's the reality. These days, if we live in a crowded city with a lot of traffic and factories in the neighborhood, it is doubtful if you can see the star-studded sky at night. That is not merely because of dust and smog, but also due to what is called light pollution, which refers to the bright patch produced by city light reflected by the dust cloud hanging above the city. Since I go back a long time, I know how beautiful the night sky can be packed with stars. Now, there are basically two kinds of objects in space. Those that are self-luminous, like our sun for example, and those that become visible by reflecting the light from a neighboring self-luminous object. If we consider our own solar system, the sun being a star is self-luminous, whereas all the planets that revolve around the sun, from Mercury to Pluto, which is the farthest, they all can be seen only because they reflect light from the sun. Indeed, it is because our Earth also reflects light that we are able to get spectacular pictures of the Earth from space. The point I am trying to make is that while a lot of radiation from the sun falls on the Earth, only a certain fraction of that radiation is absorbed while the rest is reflected. Let us now examine this reflection of sunlight by the Earth in slightly greater detail. To all of us, sunlight appears to be white. However, when sunlight is passed through a prism, the so-called white light splits into many colors, stretching from red to violet, and many other colors packed in between. In school, we were taught the word vibgyor to remember the color sequence, with red at one end having the lowest frequency and violet at the other end having the highest frequency. Coming in between violet and red are the colors indigo, blue, green, yellow and orange. That's how we get the word vibgyor. Now it turns out that the sun emits radiation over a wide band of frequency, starting from frequencies far lower than that of red, all the way to frequencies far beyond that of violet. And thank God for that, for without those high frequencies, you won't be having all the 3G and 4G phones. Please remember this as I turn to global warming next. The essence of what I have said so far is that when light from the sun falls on the Earth, the incoming radiation is spread over a wide range of frequencies. Further, the intensity of radiation emitted by the sun at different frequencies varies considerably. With good reason, and I'll leave you to get what that reason could be, the Almighty has made solar radiation peak around yellow. Around yellow, remember that. Now the Earth is not a perfect reflector, and it absorbs most of the high frequencies, while it prefers to reflect the lower frequencies. What is important in the context of global warming are the frequencies just lower than that of red, infrared radiation as it is called. The eye can see frequencies up to red, but infrared frequencies are experienced by gross matter mainly as heat. We also experience infrared as heat. So what it all boils down to is that the Earth reflects most of the heat radiation that falls on it. It should be noted at this juncture that surrounding our precious planet is a thin layer of what we call the atmosphere. This atmosphere barely extends above 70 kilometers or so above the surface of the Earth. And thanks to delicate chemical processes taking place in the upper atmosphere, planet Earth enables the sustenance of various forms of living being. I'm sorry I do not have the time to go into the details about the atmosphere, important though they are. As far as we are concerned, the important point is the oxygen in the atmosphere, which plays a vital role in keeping you and me alive. Next, I draw attention to the fact that today there are about 7 billion people on Earth, which means that we are breathing out a lot of carbon dioxide. But that's not all. Think of all the cars and trucks that pump so much carbon dioxide into the atmosphere. Most important of all, it is the factories and coal as well as oil-based electric power stations which are the worst polluters of air. You are probably saying, okay, so what? Well, here is where we have to bring in the kind, compassionate and thoughtful role played by Mother Earth. What she did from roughly about 3 to 2 billion years ago was to create plants. And plants, as we all learn in school, not only take in carbon dioxide and use sunlight for their own benefit, but also release oxygen into the atmosphere. In other words, Mother Nature has provided a built-in mechanism for cleaning the atmosphere, making up for the oxygen used by living beings. So now the question becomes, agree that Mother Nature has provided a sponging mechanism for reducing carbon dioxide content in the atmosphere and adding free oxygen to keep us alive. But what if humans pollute the atmosphere to an extent far exceeding nature's ability to convert carbon dioxide into oxygen? You may be surprised to know that limit has actually been crossed. So what are the consequences? There are many, and I wish I had the time to discuss them. Maybe I shall return to that topic some other time. For now, I shall merely mention that when the atmosphere is choked with carbon dioxide, some of it rises to the highest level and starts acting as barrier to the reflected low frequencies escaping from the Earth into outer space. In other words, when the concentration of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere exceeds a critical limit, there forms at the top of the atmosphere an onion-like sheath that wraps around the Earth. That sheet prevents infrared radiation reflected by the Earth's surface from escaping into space. In short, the heat that should have escaped into space gets trapped in the atmosphere, and slowly but surely, the average global temperature begins to rise. I won't explain what it is, but you can, I suppose, get a broad idea of what I mean. It is this progressive heating up of the atmosphere that is called global warming. Careful records compiled by scientists the world over a long time shows two important trends. One, since 1970, the carbon content in the atmosphere has been steadily increasing and at a rapid pace too. Two, during this period there has also been a steady rise in the average global temperature. I hope that the two points I have just mentioned are enough to convince you that unknown to us, we humans are in many ways placing a huge carbon burden on the atmosphere, almost close to the breaking point. Some would even say that the last straw has already been added to the camel's back. And so the question now becomes, is all this just scaremongering by some absent-minded professors lost in their research? Or is it something that needs our urgent attention when there are so many other pressing priorities? The simple and direct answer to the question I've just posed is absolutely. The rest of this talk would revolve largely around the question just raised and my answer to that question. For a moment, let me digress briefly to consider the following situation. Let us say there is a traveler who goes to a big city on a week's work and on arrival checks into a hotel. His work done, he checks out and goes back. The cleaning people then come and find to their horror that the bed sheets have been stolen, the wash basin is broken, the fridge is not working, the furniture is damaged and so on. I agree that this sort of thing does not happen often, but you know, occasionally it does. You may say, okay, but what has all that got to do with what you were talking about a minute ago? Simply this. When we were born, we came into a world that existed before us. This world existed when our parents were born, and so on, to the days when humans as a species were yet to evolve from lower species. In other words, the Earth is a part of the immense wealth created by Mother Earth, or Prakriti if you prefer, and every generation of humans is allowed to live on the Earth on the implied condition that it, i.e. the generation concerned, would leave the planet in more or less the same condition it was when it was given an opportunity to live on it. Try to observe that. Now, speaking to students many years ago, Swami said, and I am offering you a slightly expanded and what may be called liberal paraphrase. Swami said, students, God created the entire universe, including the sun, which acts as the main source of energy and life for living beings on planet Earth. Next, God provided a plentiful supply of oxygen, followed it by providing plenty of water resources and also land, enabling land-based creatures to live on. Bangaru, I hope you realize that even before you appeared on Earth, I kept everything ready for you in pristine condition, including air to breathe, water to drink, and land to live on. In addition, I have also very thoughtfully provided a good supply of iron, copper, silver, and of course also gold, since I knew the day would come when you would want gold. I also packed in some uranium, because I was well aware that the day would come when you would want to build nuclear power plants. As if all this is not enough, I also buried under the earth lots of coal and lots of oil. Now, have any of you ever taken a minute off to reflect on the fact that I provided all these only for your use? Do snakes, rats, tigers, elephants and so on want gold or oil or coal? You seem to imagine that whatever is available on and under the earth is yours and has nothing to do with me. Is that so? I created the planet mainly for your sake and gave it free. Life to you is a gift of mine, and I expected that unlike the lower species, you would live that life for me by doing my work. Instead, man has grabbed land and started selling it as if he owned it. The day then came when man started selling water, and now I believe he has started selling even air. Humans have failed to appreciate the fact that their stay on Earth is only for a short time compared to the age of the Earth, which runs into billions. As a transient occupant of the planet, humans are obliged to leave that planet and its ecosystem in more or less the same condition as they found it, so that each generation would enjoy God's blessing in the same measure. Indeed, presently, man is trying to legitimize his seizure of assets that belong to Mother Nature by declaring that God does not exist and nature intended humans to dominate the earth. Students, know this to be true. Mother Nature can be extraordinarily patient, but if ever she is aroused, her fury would be unbounded and her punishment can be frighteningly fierce. Be warned. Dear listener, there is so much to say, but bowing to the demands of time discipline, I am afraid I have to start winding up. For now, let me just say that the Gita and Swami's teachings make it abundantly clear that God is verily Dharma, and the way life must be lived allows absolutely no room for deviation from the path of Dharma. Those whose thought processes do not extend beyond the mind may find it convenient to trash absolute moral values and live by their own rules. They may even seem to succeed for a while, but in the end, the price for such recklessness has to be paid. Gandhi once said that just as in ordinary life ignorance of the law is no excuse, so it is where life in its totality is concerned. As he put it, the law and the lawgiver are one and the same. Thus, Dharma is God, and Dharma is also the road to God. All this may sound rather cryptic, but don't worry. I shall come back to this matter in some of my later talks. Well, that's all I have for you today. Thank you for listening, and I hope you liked what you heard. Goodbye for now, and please listen in again when the next talk is aired. God bless, and Jai Sai Ram.
Sai Ram, dear listeners, that concludes Professor Venkatraman's third talk in his current series. We hope you found this talk interesting and useful. Do write back to us with your comments and observation, as always, to listener@radiosci.org. Thanks for listening and giving Radio Sci the privilege of serving you. Sai Ram.